Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, you may not want to think about it again, or it could be a bit of a blur nonetheless. A new survey wants to garner experiences from people about the pandemic. What can we learn from it? And how it might help us prepare if something similar happens in the future. Nat O'Connor is Assistant Professor of Social Policy in UCD and a member of the Independent COVID Evaluation Panel. Nat, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
If people want to submit to this, is it a set of discrete questions you're asking them, or just tell us what you thought?
It's a bit of both. This is the government's COVID-19 evaluation. And what we want to do is hear from as many people as possible. So one of the ways people can do that is they can go onto the website, covid19evaluation.ie, and there's a survey there. You just click on the button saying share your experience, and you can. There's a long survey. If people prefer, there's a short, simple survey, and there are a set of questions there. Some of them are tick box, but there's also an open text box where you can express whatever you want to express in relation to your experience. Obviously, a lot of people had very difficult negative experiences, but some things worked for people, pandemic payments or working from home or whatever it might be. We want to hear the whole picture, get that sort of bigger sense of what happened. So the surveys are open until next Monday. So there's still an opportunity now at the end here to have your say, to go onto that website again, covid19evaluation.ie, and to fill out the survey. And even after that, if people want to make an individual submission, whether it's sending an email or a longer text, they can do that again via the same website.
Yeah, and is the point, I suppose, is it trying to evaluate lockdowns really and how they worked for people rather than the pandemic itself, because there was nothing we could do about that?
Well, it's the whole picture. What we're evaluating is the government response. And of course, we all know about the public health side of things. We were really focused on the hospitals, on lockdowns and stop spreading of the disease. We're going to have a special focus on the long-term residential care, as you can imagine, obviously a lot of difficult things there. But COVID interrupted everything. It interrupted schooling, kids going to school. It obviously interrupted a lot of people's ability to work. People lost their jobs, or people went on to a pandemic payment for a while. Businesses struggled due to this big gap in terms of the economy. So many things were disrupted by COVID, and the government stepped in here and there all over the place. And we want to get piece together that bigger picture of what worked, what didn't, what are the lessons we can learn. There's been a lot of individual reports written by different government departments or agencies, but we're doing the big picture, trying to join all those dots together.
Okay.
And people's opinions, people's experiences are really part of, key part of that.
Yeah, and those individual reports, which I assume looked at specific areas of the response, will they be part of this big report?
Exactly. So there's a whole lot of reading involved in all of this. So the panel members and the secretariat of the evaluation are all going through all of these, you know, dozens and dozens of reports that have already been written, you know, papers written during the pandemic by the ESRI and the NESC and so on. But what's new is getting every member of the public has an opportunity to have their say. We're having focus group meetings with different stakeholder organizations, you know, charities who are delivering services during the pandemic, trade unions, business groups, employers groups and so on. We're trying to meet as many people as possible. We're particularly concerned about people who were already marginalized or disadvantaged before the pandemic, who might have had it worse. You know, was their kids' education worse affected? Was their own economic situation made worse? So we're reaching out as much as we can to people directly, but also to groups that work with disadvantaged people to hear from them. And again, inviting everybody to come to the website, have their say, you know, make a contribution to the overall picture.
But I suppose God forbid we have another pandemic, but can we learn from this experience in other future theoretical possibilities?
Well, there's a whole lot of things we can learn, I think, because we did so many things so quickly and it was so unexpected. A lot of decisions were made quickly, and usually governments move slowly. It's all incrementalism. It's that you move one step forward and you make sure you're not going to disrupt a whole lot of other things. Here we did a whole lot of things all at once, and there were consequences. There were unintended consequences. Some people lost out. So there are a lot of lessons we can learn from that to make sure that if we are making decisions in a hurry, better communication between different branches of government, you know, that whole structure of being able to make a quick decision, but also keeping other people informed. It's a lot of good management practice we can learn and more.
Yeah. Because I suppose most governments in the world acted more or less the same way, but there were a few outliers there who said, no, we're going to have, it's going to be far less restrictive in our country. Is it your sense from the responses that to a degree what we were doing in this country. We were looking, seeing what's everyone else doing. We'll do that.
I guess it was an element of that. I mean, certainly there were some countries that did something different, like Sweden.
Mm.
And they later on pivoted from that because it didn't work out quite the way they thought it might. So there was communication across Europe, and of course the World Health Organization played a big role in sort of giving guidance. But we were lucky in the sense that, you know, the island of Ireland, you know, is protected from pandemics and because of the water around us. There's a lot fewer movement of people. Luckily, we weren't a small country in the middle of Europe because you wouldn't be able to control so many things. So we did some things ourselves. We had, you know, there was clearly our government followed scientific advice, the establishment of NPHET and other sort of science-led, health-led bodies to lead decision-making. That was what we did. And not every country did that. Even the UK, you know, didn't do that to the same extent.
Yeah.
And, you know, paid the price potentially.
Yeah. The responses you're getting are, I mean, at this stage of the game, so many years down the road, kind of one might be forgiven for thinking that we know what all the effects were because there have been so many voices discussing it. Have there been results? Are the things that we actually, the results of this either good or bad that we don't know about yet?
Well, right now it's the information gathering stage.
Yes,
so, I mean, I don't have the results. But certainly we know that there's always people who are affected in ways that you mightn't expect.
Mm.
Like the older person who was self-employed, who was told to cocoon, and that was the end of their business.
Yeah.
You know, and they lost those couple of years of income and, you know, they just... the tide moves on and that's left behind. So there's stories like that that need to be told. People who are caught up in the sort of the sweeping cocooning policy or the big, you know, policies that everybody had to follow. And it affected some people, you know, in a way that we didn't think about, like those small business owners.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. Or there may well, I mean, there are things like long COVID, but there may well be people who kind of cocooned and then found it extremely difficult to un-cocoon, if you know what I mean.
There's certainly evidence of that in other countries. I mean, there's museums and galleries and theatres have found there's a very slow return because it used to be a sort of a slightly older demographic going to certain things like theatres.
Mm.
And it was really slow to come back. Even a year after COVID, lockdown had ended, the slow return because people were afraid.
Mm.
Some people are still afraid to use public transport or they're worried about that or people are still wearing masks as a precaution. So there's a lot of long-term effects. And people's behaviour, but also people's sense of security, their mental health. And these issues are going to be with us for some time to come.
Yeah. So there probably, it's fair to say, there's probably a long-term psychological effect from the
lockdowns. People talk about scarring effect. And I think to date, the sense has been, we didn't do so badly. There's not a deep scarring effect because that doesn't mean there's not individuals who had
absolutely
a terrible experience and who really feel that they haven't had the chance to have their say or that they haven't been recognised. So it's important that we really look for, even if it's small groups of people, their story counts. And however they're badly affected, we need to know about that and see what we can do.
I don't know if it's possible to rate this or not, but certainly my sense was that, say, you know, the online world is a great place for generating conspiracy theories. Mm. But the online world, then suddenly an increased reliance on the online world and this kind of dystopian situation where the government are making us feel at home, that exploded that view of the world. And sort of my sense is, you know, we saw that yesterday. It seemed to kind of grow it, that sense that there's something really sinister happening below the surface, and increasing amounts of people believe that.
Well, there's a whole lot in what you just said there.
Yeah.
I mean, there were certainly people who were on the internet, used the internet an awful lot more.
Yeah.
Some people were pushed onto the internet who weren't really comfortable with it. But you're right, there's an awful lot of circulation of misinformation, disinformation, you know, and I think worse in other countries of people not knowing who to believe or believing all sorts of scare stories or, you know, or crank cures for COVID, you know, like drinking bleach rather than, you know, taking vaccines or a medical approach.
Yeah. Nash, thanks for already. It doesn't matter who one texter says. It doesn't matter who the public say. The government have signed our public health policy over to the corrupt WHO, as in World Health Organization. So, some strong views there, really.
Well, if anyone has strong views, get onto COVID-19evaluation.ie, and you know, all views are welcome.
Yeah. Nat, thanks very much for coming in to talk to us today. That was Nat O'Connor, there, Assistant Professor of Social Policy in UCD. And a member of the independent COVID evaluation panel. Actually, a few more comments on that. The pedestrianised streets have become a major positive of the pandemic. I have to say, although the period itself was a total nightmare, we humans aren't fantastic at making changes until we're hit by a catastrophe. Is it just me, says this texter, or do other people find it hard to process the memory of COVID? It kind of feels like it never happened, that it was just something horrible that I imagined. I kind of relate to that. I very few specific memories of it. It's just like a blur, because people worked in the media were still going, you know, and people who worked in the health service and people who worked in shops. Turns out it was way more important than we'd realised previously. But nonetheless, streets were very quiet. I'd get the Dart in, it was very quiet. I'd usually be the only person on it. And that all kind of melded into the, you know, in my mind now, that's just like all melded. Every day was exactly the same. One thing we should definitely learn from it is that our state infrastructure and decision-making can be streamlined. We don't have to go through committee after committee and spend so much time dotting I's and crossing T's that a hospital or an underground line can take a million years to complete. And another texter says, an Eastern European taxi driver told me he knew lots and lots of people and friends who got pandemic payments. Some of them were back in our own country. All they had to do was register online and give their PPS number to get it. Yeah, there was a fair few people who, you certainly heard about a lot of younger people, for instance, who got that pandemic payment and spent 2 years living in Spain.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.